Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gutapi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a
I
have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. Hey, go check out the new website. Macroaggressions.io is the place to do that. You can find out information about the books and the podcasts and Anarchapulco and all that good stuff. And also a little bit about our sponsors that make the show happen. I try to bring sponsors that make good stuff. I mean, at the bare minimum, shit, I might as well give you access to some companies that are doing it right. Chemical Free Body's been with this show since the beginning. You can find Tim James and he'll tell you all about how changing his health saved his life. And he started this company because of it. Go to chemicalfreebody.com and just take a look and see what you think. And if you find that detox bundle, that's pretty amazing. I've done that twice. It's a 90-day program. It's Green 85 and then a handful of pills. It's real easy. Doesn't hurt your stomach or anything like that, but it's 90 days and you will notice a difference. So go check it out. See what you think. It's a new year. You're the one that's got to be in charge of taking care of your health. Nobody can do it for you, but the promo code is macro. It saves you some money. So check it out. Also, EMP Shield has been fantastic to us. They make a device that fits on your house, on your car, on your boat or motorhome, if you've got one of those, or a generator, and it'll protect against EMPs, solar flares, and lightning. It's fitted to your household circuit breaker with four wires, like a type 2 surge protector. You can install it yourself. I would probably electrocute myself if I tried to do it, so I'm not going to, but most people that know how to handle that stuff would probably laugh at me and be able to do it in 10 minutes. So you can watch installation videos or you can have an electrician come do it yourself. Go to empshield.com, read up all about it. If you find something you like, promo code is macro. And am I going to see all you people in Mexico and in Anarchapulco? I certainly hope so. In Anarchapulco, February 11th through the 16th, Acapulco, Mexico, the largest anarchist conference in the world. I'll be there hosting, ringleading it. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like the craziest trade show you've ever been to in the world. So go check it out. Anarchapulco.com, promo code macro. Well, I'm excited for this one. We wanted to have this conversation. I've wanted to have this conversation for a while. It's 2024. It feels like a very weird year. There's a whole lot of psychological operations going on. I was on Twitter. I saw Cheney. She made a comment about something and I was like, I got to. Why haven't we done this sooner? Ladies and gentlemen, you can go find her at projectcheney.com. Cheney, hi. Good to see
you. Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And I feel like we've done this before, but we totally have never.
I know. It's the union of the unwanted stuff where we've had the group calls, and I think also maybe a day zero or something like that where we've done it. I certainly do like that you're willing to go where a lot of people are unwilling to. I like that. I respect that. And I feel like this year there's been like a concerted effort in the last half of 2023 to make us feel some sort of anxiety towards this year, this 2024. And I never feel really super comfortable, but I do understand sort of, you know, we've got an election in the United States. We've got elections all over the world, a lot of places. We've got an Olympic Games coming up, which is predictive programming up the ass, if not a ripe opportunity for some sort of weird false flag. So like, it feels like an important year. And it also feels like we're being made to feel a certain way about it. What have you been, feeling about this on your end?
They have been trying to set up, I feel like they're living by a Revelations playbook. And so we've gotten all the four horsemen up until, you know, we've had the plague and the hunger and the, oh my gosh, it's so scary. We even have this year, 13-year and 17-year locust cycles match up this year. So it's even like all the plagues of the apocalypse are like right on schedule, and World War III. So I feel like a perfect marketed war. You, to get the WW in front of it, you got to pay off a whole bunch of lobbyists and a whole bunch of big corporations to get the WW in front of your war. So I think that 33 of it all like amping up, and then I think we have an earthquake right at the beginning of the year, like a huge earthquake. And then right away, all my head thinks right for 2024 right now, it's Miami Mall aliens is like the big push.
Miami Mall aliens and underground Jews. It's just like you throw your hands up and you go, it's going to be a hell of a year.
You know? I feel like even in the Palestinian Israel of it all, everybody's like, can you believe there's so many underground things and women and children are all underground? And then we find out, oh, can you believe all these Hasidic Jews and stuff in New York and they're doing all this stuff underground? And I'm like, can we believe it? This is literally what we've lost all of our accounts about. This is what we've been screaming about from the rooftops. Can we believe it? And most of the people, even before the WikiLeaks or the Pizzagate or even the Q of it all, most people that were in this realm have been screaming some part. I feel like Alex Jones, like, interdimensional space demons are eating your babies. Like, can we believe it? Like, we've really been just dictating that there's a whole world going on underneath your feet. This, it's an underground railroad, but it's happening in the opposite than you think. And this is what we've been called conspiracy theorists about forever. So right now it's coming in. Every time it seems to be like, let's talk about this thing. Like, the media has to, trials happen and they happen slowly. And so every time Epstein's in the news, so are UFOs. And so I just think it's like a blur every time.
They are, aren't they? I remember when UFOs were fun. I remember when Heaven's Gate, you know, 1997, Doe and the black Nikes and the eating the applesauce and the purple high tops or whatever, and going to the mothership that was behind Hillbop. Yeah, that was amazing. You know, that was fantastic. And now, I don't know. I mean, I feel like I have high standards when it comes to these UFO psychological operations. Like, I demand a higher quality psyop than 10-foot aliens at the Miami Mall. You know what
I
mean?
Are they now, like, now because I know to so much, now I'm like, are they the fallen? Did they come out of a giant beanstalk? Like, did we cut down some giant tree somewhere and that was a beanstalk up to somewhere and then the giants fell? Did we steal a golden harp somewhere and this has been this battle of time? Now I just start thinking of everything in such a way that just telling me like a gray lamb, just telling me lamb comes out of a flying saucer, you got to do more. Like, yeah. I'm just, but I also F with the ideas a little bit of if you could do witchcraft and open up portals, which I kind of think you can. I think there's gates. I think the star clock is real in a way that they can do things. Some people theorize there wasn't anything like a Loch Ness monster until Aleister Crowley bought a house on the shore of the Loch Ness and then had people meet there and do dark magic. And then the same can be said about the same rituals in the desert, that that crash happens right after they do that stuff in Area 51. So what if it's not a far away thing that we think, but portals opening kind of idea?
Well, you've got the CEO of D-Wave, Jordy Rose, a quantum computer manufacturing company out of Canada, saying that his quantum computers have opened up portals in which they've been able to drag back information from other dimensions. And you're like, from who?
Stranger Things, like 11. If I think, you know, the men who stare at goats, that whole, like, it's a New Earth
SRI
Army, or Rainbow Army, yeah, New Rainbow Army or something. So they really can do this thing. Their mind is so powerful that they do figure out a way to not just be able to stare at a goat and it die, but to astral travel and to start being super spies in a nature and never leave a chair. I think they realized that there was a lot of power in training a soldier to do this thing. And the soldier didn't necessarily have to tell you everything when they came back. They retained some of the power and the knowledge. But if they took children and did this, they were not only better at it, quicker at it, they had no bias to do this, but they didn't think about the outcome of when a kid goes. They didn't think of the things the soldiers were seeing and not bringing back with them. But I think when the kids were coming back, like 11 on Stranger Things, they were bringing in stuff into these realms that we don't understand, darknesses, maybe monsters in that kind of way. And I think this is a military operation. I think it's all kind of proven. And so I think in a bigger scale, they work with us to do, they're like, how big can they make it? They're like, if we can push all of them to these levels of this, what can we can convince the collective to do if this is what we can get one child to do? That's sometimes how I think this world is way more magical than it is logical. And that's the parts that I believe in now, that if you would have questioned just political Cheney in 2018, if I was talking to me, I would have been like, whoo, that girl's crazy.
Well, there's something very unusual that's also undeniable. That is there. You know, like my partner on this show, Tony Merkel, runs a show called The Confessionals, and they go out and they make, in addition to the podcast, they do movies. And they went out and spent a week at the Zero Wolf Ranch. I might be getting the name wrong. The place next to Skinwalker. Uh-huh. And spent the week there filming and had wild shit happen. The whole time they were there, like it was like an interdimensional truck stop where like all kinds of things were showing up. They'd walk down a path, they'd go up the hill, they'd come back down the path. There'd be a pile of bones that were like meticulously piled up into a form of like a shrine. And they had gone up and come back down in like an hour. Like it just, I don't know, it just didn't make any sense. And they saw UFOs every night. And they had all kinds of crazy shit like that happen. And they asked, you know, Ryan Burns, who owns the Space Wolf Ranch, is what they asked him, like, what have you seen? He's like, well, I've woken up and the big, you know, industrial size shipping container that's going one way. The next day you go out there and it's going the other way and there's no drag marks. It didn't, and nobody heard anything and nobody did it. You know, so they're like, what the fuck are we supposed to make of this? You know what I mean? Like, fine, I'm crazy. Great.
Now what?
Now let's move on. Explain how this is happening. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the powers that be know how powerful we are. And they're using, I always use Guns N' Roses lyrics here. They're using our illusion against us so that they can make a Chinese democracy.
Nice.
I feel like that's kind of we're really powerful. And I think there's so many more powers, everyone pretty much that we call crazy. These like where they're like, whoa, that person's clairsentient, clairaudient, you can go through a list of things, but then people are like, well, Harry Houdini, he never proved this. And I'm like, Harry Houdini was probably, if he was that famous, then the same as Charlie Chaplin or the same as Alec Baldwin or the same as once you make it to these spheres, then Harry Houdini to me, I just see is an 8-8. Like he's an HH. Like it's a Hugh Hefner. It's like one of these like created characters to make you believe in a sleight of hand, but no magic. And so that's why I think the school of magicians is to bury real magic and make it all seem sleight of hand and make it all seem. That's why it's, I think it's weird. David Copperfield is the one making the moon disappear in February. And we've grown up with this guy
his
whole life in our zeitgeist. Yes, exactly. He has his own island in the Bahamas. He was married to a trafficked Victoria's Secret model, Claudia Schiffer, which I feel like anyone in the Claudia Schiffer angels, those are all trafficked. They're just trafficked to people that are higher grade than you can think about.
Right.
And so he is the exact same as an Epstein, just in the Bahamas. Lenny Kravitz, I would question. Like a lot of these people that are just there, I'd be like, that person's sus.
there's a lot of that. I've talked about Epstein before, where I sort of described him as having like East Coast franchise of the sexual blackmail entrapment, you know, New York, Palm Beach, Virgin Islands. Yeah, the New Mexico place too. But like, as an example of the West Coast, you mentioned HH. Like, what was going on at Hugh Hefner's Playboy Mansion? I mean, if that wasn't just
tunnels.
The top underground tunnels. Yes, here come the tunnels again. We love our tunnels. trafficked victims. A lot of people not remembering what was going on, except for the people running the cameras. A lot of cocaine. A lot of all kinds of crazy shit going on. A lot of Drew Barrymore doing coke when she's 14 and stuff like that. I mean, not exactly a healthy place. I mean, to me seemed like when you allow them to put the honey trap right out in front and make e-documentary television shows about it, they've got you. They've captured your mind. Like when it turns into entertainment, showing you the honey trap.
That's kind of where I
put your hat and go, you guys are really good at these psychological operations, man. Like you got us on this one.
I know we're all like, yay, I want to be in the waterfall. I want to go in the, like, we're all wanting it too. And it's just, it's children going on. They lure everyone there with the idea of a grown woman in a bikini. That's how they lure everyone to the thing. And it's like the edgy kink, the edgy kink, the edgy kink. But if there's tunnels underneath the Playboy Mansion that we know for a fact go to Warren Beatty's, James Caan's, and Jack Nicholson's, there is nothing anyone can do to convince me that there isn't also one that goes to Roman Polanski's.
He hung
out with the group the whole time. And so I think Charles Manson is a complete fall guy. So even that whole story of this guy that's like, I've been studying Charles Manson for 30 years and here's all the ways he attaches to the mamas and the papas and the dancing. And da, da, da. Yeah, that too. But that guy is also burying something. Like anyone that they allow their book to become the book. It's like the New York Times bestseller list is the same as the top 40 music chart. It's all deals. So it's like somebody else wrote the real book about Laurel Canyon, but that guy's book was the allowed one to get through. Like you're never going to find the dude's pamphlet that did all the real work that like are like, no, Charles Manson was a setup. He was an MK Ultra victim himself. And they just used him to take the studio and make the cult as a precursor to Scientology.
Now you've got Jared Leto buying that house up there. And he's into some cult adjacent behavior. I mean, if not outright running a fucking cult.
Not John of God, but like something of Christ or children of something. He was come up through a cult. And I think it's the same cult that River Phoenix, Joaquin Phoenix, Rain Phoenix, and all the Phoenixes came up through.
And that would make sense.
It does make a lot of sense. And even their names, like River and like Joaquin, we know him now, but his name used to be Leaf when he was on a movie called Space Camp.
Yeah.
Like when he's just the little kid that talked to the robot. Because he's a child passed around kid too. And then his brother.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember
Johnny Depp had something to do with that murder.
I remember when that happened. I was living in L.A. when.
Oh, wow.
When he died. I've been to the Viper Room before.
I've been to the Viper Room as well.
Not too long after that. Yeah, it's a weird. That was a weird time. I've been to the Chateau Marmont Hotel too, where Belushi OD'd, and that whole scene that was going on there. I mean, that's a sketchy place. And then, and we see that, and you go, "Oh, that's the age."
Everybody says the standard with Bourdain. I believe it was the Chateau. Everybody says the standard, but I actually believe it was the Chateau Marmont that he was next door to Adam Schiff, and the black kid ends up dead. And Anthony Bourdain witnesses this thing, this whole calamity, and then he ends up dead soon after. And he ends up red scarfed.
Chateau Marmont is a deep Hollywood operator place. You know, it's a very unusual place. It's right on. It's a great location. I've never stayed there, but I've been there. I've been there up into a room before. It's nothing special, you know. But it's legendary, and the location is killer. But there's a lot of those Hollywood stories that. I would hear these crazy stories about, I knew this guy who was a photographer, and he had a roommate, and his roommate was this male model that was so well known that like you never recognize male models, like they're nameless, right? But like he was so well known in the 90s that you would recognize him. He was always on the
his cover name was of probably Marcus. I don't know why, and but I feel
it's
like
it's
I
not
know
Marcus Schenkenberg. It was a different guy. It was a different guy. I know the guy's name. I'm not going to say it, but he was on the cover of all these magazines, and I was like, dude, like I know who this guy is. And this photographer's like, well, that's my roommate. Like I know, like and that guy, that roommate, was kept getting propositioned by David Geffen to have sex with him for like $100,000. And the thing is, this male model guy wasn't gay. And he was like, no, that's the thing about Geffen, is that they want to break you. They want to turn you out. They want to use that money to make you do something that you don't want to do. That's what they get off on. And I was like, what the fuck? And this is 96, I'm hearing this, right? This is like my first time here. So then I asked around, and I asked around to like one of my I don't know too many, but I do have one or two A-list Hollywood people that I knew at the time, not really friends now, but people that I knew at the time, knew well enough to go to their home.
And
I would say, hey, can I run a David Geffen?
I always try to explain to people, whatever your town is, if your town's full of bakers and you could make every baker in your town wear an orange vest, that's what LA is like, except it's their face. And you know, it just happens to be their job, but it's so full of people that you happen to know their face that you can't help if you're friends with a couple of celebrities. It's like something that just happens.
And my sports media training company wouldn't have made it if it wasn't for a couple celebrity friends that kicked in some money. But this particular guy I was talking to was an A-level actor. And I said, can I run a David Geffen story by you? And I was like, pay $100,000. He's like, I didn't even finish it. He's like, yes, he's the worst. He's awful. I was like, and this is like known throughout the industry? And they're like, yeah, like these guys are awful. And I was like, fuck, okay. So that was really like the first time, even though I lived there, I didn't work in Hollywood really. I mean, but I didn't actually live in Hollywood. I just lived in the LA area, but you kind of know people come and go. Like you said, you didn't run around with people. I just had no idea how dark it was. I really just didn't even know what I didn't know at that point. And now
I talk with other friends of mine that we were just young and dumb and lucky. lucky that we weren't, like, I did my own dark stuff and I saw, like, it's almost like I tell people, like, if Hollywood is a, I ended up in the hallway, but never opened the door. Like, I ended up in the right houses sometimes, but never got invited to the basement. And I maybe said the wrong thing, or I was also a girl by that time in my life that I smoked a lot of weed. And so everybody else that partook in so much drinking or so much drugs or so much, I always was just kind of an observer. So I was never out, even if I was holding a drink the whole night or hanging out with a girl who was doing a bunch of coke, I always had my full wits about me. So it was just like some of the situations that I ended up in were purely my decision. I never ended up in anything, but I, in my naivete sometimes, and I say this to people and it sounds so, I'm so glad somebody didn't offer me adrenochrome. I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known any difference what it is now and how I would have felt about it now being a person. So it's just like some of the dumb stuff that I've even like, I smoked on camera. I'm so glad that they didn't offer me more money and I would have been like, yeah, okay, I'll do this topless. You know, it's just like you're dumb and you're like, where's this right. going to come up later?
And also, to be fair, back then, it was like a different time. I'm talking about like in the 90s when I was living in LA. Like, nobody had camera phones and shit like that. Like, there was
thousands. So even if they had a camera phone of you, it was like not really great, but quality. You
could get 15 seconds. You could still kind of do whatever you wanted to do. I had the unique position of being a bartender for 7 years, but I didn't drink. So I was the sober bartender and I remembered everything that was going on. And so when I would go out, you know, we'd go out afterwards and, you know, go to our bars ourselves or do all that stuff or after parties back at the owner's house and everything, all these crazy ass parties. I remembered all of it. I was like, if I had had like a Jeffrey Epstein bone in my body, I could have been like, you fuckers owe me money. Because, but instead I was the good guy that would take when my friend was up $2,000 at the blackjack table in Vegas, I would take his money from him and put it in my pocket so that he didn't spend it. And the next morning when he'd wake up and go, I lost all my money. I would say, I got your money, dickhead. Took it from you. You were about to lose it all. So I'm that guy. But I always had fun and I always remembered it all. And I was in situations where I was like, what? Like, this isn't maybe the best situation to be in. This is going to be a tough one to explain. Like, nothing bad is happening, but I would have a hard time explaining my way out of a situation where there's like, why do you have prostitutes up in the room? Like, what the fuck is going on? Who called hookers up to the room? And some guy's like, I did. And you're like, what do we do? I'm like, I'm not really down with this, but like, you know, you could find yourself in a situation where people would, you know, would assume you're up to no good because you're at a party. We're downstairs in the basement. They're doing all sorts of horrible shit. And I mean, I never even heard any of that stuff when I lived in LA. It's not until years later that in looking back, because if I had, I would have had way more questions for those guys. It would have turned into an interview. There,
my head never even thought about kids. Like, my head never even thought about that. Like, I didn't see any at parties. I didn't see any, like, they weren't in the realm. It almost felt like a town of like between 20 and 50 year olds. The whole town just kind of felt like that to me. I don't even remember.
Totally. No, I never got that vibe either.
They had families outside.
But I never worked there.
Yeah. I did some and I worked in music a little, but I just, it never was, but I always heard those things about certain people that are just rumors that stay inside Hollywood that I'm like, why don't you ever see this on a poop paper? Like about Steven Spielberg, same thing as David Geffen. And it just seems like an open rumor in Hollywood that everybody knows these certain things about these certain big celebrities. And they all happen to be friends with Oprah. But everyone just knows these things. Like everyone, like Weinstein was no secret in Hollywood. It was like everybody knew about Weinstein. So I just, it's kind of, it's to me, like Weinstein's a guy that they're like, oh, we'll cut Weinstein. Then we're not going to get in trouble. Oh, we'll cut Epstein. That's why I think in my head, the Epstein thing, Ghislaine's not ever supposed to get in trouble for any of the Epstein things. And I believe Kevin Spacey is the Sizer Kose. I think he's the one that turns heel. I think he's everything that they're building their case on is Kevin Spacey. He's the one that sat with the queen on the chair. I think Epstein is a fall guy. He's kind of a nobody. The Maxwells have been doing this stuff since before Epstein was born. Epstein is literally just a front guy. When people are like, how did Ghislaine get wrapped up with Jeffrey Epstein? I'm like, Ghislaine's family's been doing this, and Ghislaine was chosen by her father because she was the one that had the same moral code to keep doing it like him. So I feel like Epstein's a nobody. Ghislaine thought she was going to walk away from this, and something about Spacey is the flip. Like, there's just something. I'm like, something's going to come out with this guy. He's been next to Bill Clinton too many times. He's been next to Ghislaine too many times. And then all the things that come out about Spacey are like, he tried too hard to kiss a 17-year-old on the mouth. Like, the real stories. But then he's also the one that they're like, Kevin Spacey was so perverted, they wouldn't even let him on the island anymore. And I'm like, why do we know this? Where do we find this out from? Like, Bill Clinton went home one day and couldn't wait to write in his diary about how dirty Kevin Spacey was. Like, who's the first person who put this on the timeline for conspiracy theorists?
It's funny. I don't know. Kevin Spacey's, you know, listen, there's been a lot of people around him that have turned up in bad spots, maybe even dead. So, like, he's, and, you know, he played a character on Netflix that was politically connected and diabolical. And
Frank Underwood.
Then he played in Usual Suspects. He played a criminal mastermind pretending to not be a criminal mastermind, pretending to be something else, acting like something else. And now we find him as an actor pretending to be something else. But if he was a criminal mastermind, he certainly would be pretending to be an actor as a great cover story, wouldn't he?
And he has all the Christmas videos that come out every year, and then 2 years
those are weird
come out, and then he's on Tucker Carlson, and
yes,
he is in the first one. He's drinking out of a queen's cup, and so it's like threatening the royal family, and he's doing it in the character of Frank Underwood. The crazy part about the character of Frank Underwood in the House of Cards of it all is his wife becomes president after him. And everybody says the character of Frank Underwood in Robin Wright Penn at the time that they are played by, like, they're built on Hillary and Bill. So she becomes the president. And I really believe something like, we're on such a weird timeline. I'm a person that I believe Hillary was supposed to be our president from 2016 to 2020, and her second term was supposed to be to 2024. Joe Biden was never supposed to happen for the evil day. This was like a, oh shit, this was their Hail Mary. It's their Hail Biden. I don't believe it was all supposed to be set up around Hillary.
Their starting quarterback got hurt. Yeah. And they had to go with their backup quarterback. And their backup quarterback is a retarded old man who shits his pants with the Pope.
I think they had stolen every election, and they had proven that they'd stolen the election even from Bernie beforehand. They had the more Dominion machines that had crept into these places, the better it was. And so these bigger, as long as she won the popular vote. Yeah, she beat Obama in the popular vote too. And then he became the running side for the Democratic Party, but she beat him too. So I think they, like, each one of these things was a test. And I think they steal the election, clean shot from Bernie in the West Coast. And their coup de grace was Oregon, because he had the robotic bird land on his podium. They had set up Oregon with put a bird on it for a few years beforehand. So they had already brainwashed them that Bernie was going to be their dude. And if they could get Oregon to eat crow, no pun intended, that you guys aren't going to get Bernie, even though you're going to know in your heart you all voted for Bernie, we're still going to flip it and show you right in your face Hillary's going to be your girl for all the blue, all of California, which was never supposed to be the thing. The DNC comes around. They all stand up. Bernie wins the day before. They do, like a vote, like a practice run. And Bernie wins it during the DNC. Right. He stops it. He's like, and he has a black eye. Everyone's like, what the hell happened to Bernie? Stops it right after his brother speaks. And he's like, Hillary can just have it. Like, he just gives in, throws in the towel. And we're like, what? Like, all the Bernie people. So then Trump and Hillary come. It's this whole shit show. We all watch it all go down, blah, blah, blah. The news is all pushing. Hillary has no chance of ever losing this. Hillary, 90% president, everything Hillary, Hillary, Hillary. Last day. It's like top, you know, bottom of the fourth. Last day, Trump goes to the four key states only that, if I'm guessing, they're the only states without Dominion running them anymore, because Florida already had the debacle with Bush Gore. So we already had changed our voting. Ohio had changed theirs. Pennsylvania had changed theirs, and Michigan had changed theirs. So he does this hightail the last day through these states. And I don't think really they ever thought she was going to lose. I think it was like, what? No. So then they spend the next 4 years just impeaching this guy, just giving him really the, like, here's the plague. And then let's see what you're going to do with this. So I feel like if I just call him the MAGA magnifying glass, no one would have known who Fauci was except for the few 60-year-old men that happened to be pure tops. No one knew the name Anthony Fauci until that guy made him the head of the coronavirus task force. No one, Pence. This guy, no one knew his name until he made him the head of the coronavirus task force. So I think a lot of these people, the Burke, the, you know, Dr. Burke, a lot, all the,
yeah,
no one would have known their name. Nobody knew Hillary. No one knew Pelosi. No one knew. So it doesn't matter about the, like, a political side. I just feel like a magnifying glass, like in my head, if I had a time machine and I was going to do a communist wave on our country, I would call it a red wave. I would make everyone wear a red hat. If I'm going to do a spell of communism, and if I'm going to have a woman-run tyranny about to roll in on everyone, from the Meghan Merkel of it all the way to the Hillary Clinton, to the Nancy Pelosi, to the AOC, to the Kardashians, to the Beyonce, to the fat Lizzo. If I'm going to do that, I'm also going to use the word MAGA on my side. And I'm going to use the word witch on my side. And so if I had a time machine and could see a really disastrous future, it would be full of red and witches. And so if I needed to transmute that spell, I would come back in time and steal that red and steal that word MAGA and make it Make American Great Again, when really we all know it means witch. We all know. So it's just like, I think it's a transmutation of a spell. And you're like, oh, you'd have to believe in time travel. Somebody would have to have time travel blueprints. How would somebody even get those? Oh, you mean John Trump?
Tesla's
blueprints? So you would have to have a ton of money to make those blueprints work. Oh, like Batman, like the Waynes? Like, yeah, that's what it all seems like to me. That's it. It's like, I'm not even saying good guy, bad guy. I think Trump's as much plan D, F, as Hillary would have been for, I just think it's like some warring things and we're just caught in the middle of it. I don't know if crime good guy, fam- bad competing, guy, but
competing crime families, you know,
it's just like that. I'm a statist though. I know you're an anarchist, but I believe in the tiniest little amount of government. I believe like,
in the absence of anarchy, I'll take the tiniest amount of government.
Yeah, like possible, I'm a real constitutional republic person. Like I believe there just needs to be a tiny little thing. You have your sheriff and you have your local mayor and you have your little city council and you have your little school board. You know who your, DA is, who you vote in as your judge. You know these people and you actually educate yourself on these people. If you don't educate yourself on these people and you know your president's name or you know the name of the governor in my state, not your own, that's where I'm like, what is, do you know your own constitution of your state? So I'm like the smallest amount possible. So some of the stuff that's happening too with abortions and guns and it's all getting hit back up to the Supreme Court and hit back down to the states. I don't care what you care about it. There's 50 different decisions that you can drive your car to. So that's what the United States should be. If we really think of ourselves like a European Union, us being all separated, we're the hardest thing to control because we have 50 separate states. Like we shouldn't think like one, like a democracy. And anyone I hear talk with the word democracy, I'm like, you need to educate yourself. Stop saying the word democracy. We're not a democracy. We were never set up to be majority mob rule. Like, that's not the way.
We need to decentralize as much as possible. And if that down to the state level, 50, like you said, 50 states would be pain in the ass to control. That's the point. It's that it should be a pain in the ass to control. I love the I've got the Chris Hedges telling the story about Henry Kissinger in the White House when Nixon is there, and Nixon has done some unpopular thing. I don't know what. I mean, it could be anything. And the people were very mad, and he'd put buses like end to end surrounding the White House to keep these people away. And he's looking out of the window, and he's wringing his hands, and he's got Kissinger next to him, and he's telling Kissinger, "Henry, they're going to get us. They're going to come over the walls, and they're going to get us." And Chris Hedges is like, that moment right there, when they're experiencing that fear, that is where all of these people should be at all moments of it while they're working in this government. They should be fearing that we're coming over the walls.
Horses
after
and
like
torches.
That's the mentality they
horses
should have.
Horses and torches. They should think at any moment if they do wrong. The whole point is, in my little tiny space, we all vote and we don't have time. We got crops to run, kids to raise, schools. So we send one dude that has time or one lady who has time, or we all vote and we're like, sorry, it's your time. We'll take care your crops and kids right now, but it's your time. We all voted you in. You get on your horse and torch and you drive up and you speak for us. And if you don't speak right by us, we got your kids and farm back here, friend. So I don't understand how these people are becoming politicians for states they're not in. I don't understand how you become any member of any part of government holding dual citizenship. I don't understand at all. And I am a peaceful anarchist. Like if we lived in a place where people were actually like, I'm not even, because I understand tigers got to be tigers and deers got to be deers. And, you know, but I just, in a world that we're in, I just want my nieces to never have to pick up guns. I want to protect innocent where I can. I don't think the whole world needs to know about the Epstein flight log. If I can make it so that that can't exist anymore for them, that's what I want. And that would be no government at fucking all. Like, that's where I'm like so on board with the like, but I'm going to fucking fight for them because it's like so far away right now.
Yeah. It's, it just feels like they're, I don't know, all these different agendas are kind of hitting us all at once. I'm getting, I don't know. I was talking to Sam Tripoli about this. We were talking about ideological subversion, you know, and Yuri Bezmenov and his four steps to it. And it was so funny because it's like, you know, you watch that video of them talking about it a million years, 40 years ago, and it's all theoretical, you know, and then you go and you watch it now and you go, oh my God, like this is exactly what's happened. Who did this to us? He's explaining it like it's the KGB and the Soviet Union that did this to us. We've already subverted you. You don't know. And you go, okay, well, I believe you. I believe you that you've already subverted you. But I also would like to ask the question, isn't it reasonable to think that it's not just the Soviet Union that has subverted America, that there are multiple factions trying to subvert us at the same time? Because I see what's going on with the media control over the Israel situation. That's super thorny for a lot of people to discuss. You know, I see, you know, they're it feels like they're manipulating us and wanting us to feel a certain way about these wars. Or you got to stand with Ukraine. Why aren't you standing with Ukraine? And you're just like, why are you selling this so hard? It feels so inauthentic to me. You know, it's
how
just
many been... countries have their hand in your pocket. Like our taxes are such a joke. Like I remember being a person where I was like, churches should pay taxes. And then one day it hit me like a ton of bricks. Nobody should pay taxes. The right. Churches are the best thing Scientology ever did was harass the IRS until they said, nah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the one thing I would say to them. Like,
it's like you gotta give
job, guys.
Credit where credit is due. It's
like, credit where credit is due. You got the IRS to leave you alone. I like your style on that. Don't sue me.
Like, we're going to call and harass you until you're like, I don't want to anymore. I'm going to quit this job. But there's just something. It's like all our allies have nothing. It's almost like we should look at who our allies are. And that is who has the most to gain by keeping us in kerfuffle. And then you would say, oh, the crown? Yes. Oh, the country we can't ever name? Yes. Like, yes. It's really just the same ones over and over again. So I'm just like, if everything you've ever taught me is a lie, I just, the Red Scare that you teach me about Russia, I'm like, I think if we have a scare, yes, there's shadow government running all of us, the poor people of every country. But I actually think like the Red Dragon is the red dragon. I think China is the one. I think there's a reason. China. Yeah. I think the PPEs that we didn't take were the spread of the virus. And I think, yeah, I think there was something also in the vaccine, but I think the PPE that everyone yelled at Trump that he left offshore when they called him a xenophobe and all this, I think everybody that, when you get a test, you put the virus or whatever sickness up your nose. I don't want to get in a terrain theory debate, but whatever. You put corona up your nose. And when you put a mask on, you incubate that in your face. And so I just think it's a very easy thing that's why all of a sudden our companies in our country, all of a sudden making our PPE overnight. It was one of the EOs that was signed. Also, we were all about to all get put on Bill Gates' fake meat. We were all about to get put on it. And DJT signed an EO to keep the meat plants open in America and make them not just our McDonald's workers and our Burger King workers, but also those people had to be employees that showed up at work every day.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, well, it's like, there's a lot of EOs that went down. Like, you can't save the world in 4 years. And then no one man could. It would have had to have been something. Like, somewhere in my naivete, I like to think, like, Kennedy was killed by a lot of people. It wasn't just CIA. It was like there was a lot of dark entities that had a big thing to gain. And a red thing, sorry, Canadians, Canada is red can be. Cuba is red can be. And so that red was encroaching on our country and our borders. And everyone that I know that's in Texas right now, no one is scared of Mexicans coming over. Not one American gives a shit about Mexicans coming over. This is never the worry. This isn't the worry. It never has been. It's like this part of it. I even think ideologically, like thinking of the old school, like two-car garage, Christian family. Nobody is going to compete with any other ideology unless the Mexican family saves American white family. That's the only thing that's going to save, because white people aren't having that many kids. And the way you keep a land is like a thought process. So in a Christian nation, whatever people say and argue, and it's not really my fight to take, but majority of the religion here is that. So, and I think these certain places of the world hold these majority of religions for whatever reason they may be. So if they want that religion to stay in this country, it's not Mexicans the white people are scared of, like the news is telling you. Because they're like, bring the Catholics, bring them.
But instead, what we're getting is the insane asylums from Venezuela. We're getting the prisons getting emptied out. And I see that and I think to myself, if I'm Venezuela, that's a fantastic strategy. I have to tip my hat to those lunatics over there, because it's like you tried to regime change our country. We caught your SEALs. We humiliated them by putting them on the dock there and tying them up, keeping them for a couple years, trading them back to you. But I'll tell you, we got a little present for you. We're going to take all of our crazy people out of the nut houses and put them on buses and send them to the border and then tell them, go to America where your dreams will be realized. And that's our punishment for doing it. I think it sucks for us, but I think it's a hilarious idea to do that.
I think inside our medicine, we do not have any Americans inside our medicine. We do not have any Americans inside our universities. That's what I think it's funny too. When people are like, oh no, 15-minute cities. I'm like, you've been paying $100,000 to send your kid to a university for a while. They're ready for it. Even when they tried to overturn affirmative action at the colleges because there was more Chinese kids getting into colleges than American white kids. So they were like, the affirmative action, screwy at the Ivy League schools now. So I think a lot of we're infiltrated, like JFK said, from inside. I think Richard Nixon, there's a good opportunity. He was completely framed and set up, shamed. And whatever.
I mean, he was a crazy person for sure.
I think he deleted something off those tapes that was either about everything we talk about right now with tunnels and human trafficking, or about who infiltrated the DNC back when? And JFK Jr. wrote to Biden, like, you're a traitor. Like, you're a traitor, Mr. Biden. And so Biden's taking all this money from China. I just see too many Manchurian candidate things. I think a lot of their companies or countries been overtaken by shadow government. And I don't really believe most of North Korea is real. I think that whole entire thing's a Sandy Hook.
I heard that when you think of North Korea, you should think of the CIA.
That's what I do. I think even Dennis Rodman going over there, which I think is so funny. Think of this too. Who look up all the Apprentice stars, Joan Rivers, yeah. Dennis Rodman. When you start looking them up, you'll be like, huh, these people in our zeitgeist are all very interesting. I have a podcast that I do late nights on Fridays, and it's called The Secret Society of Good Guys. And it's been this theory I've been playing around with for about 7 or 8 years because I love UFC fighting. And one night I was just sitting around with my friend, my best guy friend, and we were smoking, and there's this UFC female fighter. Her name's Bullet Valentina Shevchenko, and she's a master marksman, and she was the UFC 125 pound champion for a while. Her sister was also a UFC fighter, and she flew helicopters just as her side. Like, she would just do it voluntarily to put out forest fires and all this stuff. And these women travel all over the world, and their mom was a fighter. They're from Poland. Like, she was a Muay Thai belt holder, and their father, and they travel all over the world. And I was thinking about their team that travels with them. And I was like, huh, Dana White's like BFF with DJT. And if I were trying to get certain kind of military SEALs, like, let's say I had to work outside of the American military because they had all been infiltrated for decades. And so we had to create this secret society of good guys. Isn't the UFC a perfect disguise to get them everywhere you needed in the world? You could get them to Dubai. You could get them to China. You could get them in places that no other American entertainment's allowed into, especially if you make a certain Chinese champion here and there. And so then I was like, in this WWE way of, we know all of everything we're watching with politics is just WWE on TV. It's just like Hollywood, right, for the ugly, of course. Washington, D.C. And so I'm like, huh, this whole thing of UFC and where they travel and their teams, they're like a secret society of good guys. They're the toughest guys in the world in all the weight classes. And I would say, like, one of the best art of war is you hide in plain sight. And So if we're watching a dictated script and we see China, LeBron James, and everybody else play ball, no pun intended, when the NBA shuts down is pretty much when the United States shuts down. And we would have never opened sports except Dana White was like, I'm going to Florida. We're going to open up in Florida. Yes. And all of a sudden sports started again, people think, oh, it's all bread and circus. You can think what you want, but unfortunately, a lot of people in the 3D need the bread and circus to go on, or they were never going to leave their house. A lot of people in the 3D needed a shitty vaccine to come out, or they were never going to leave their house. Like, there's people out there that still wear a mask when they drive. Like, There's real people out there that if you would have told them COVID is at 6 feet, they would have crawled on their knees for the last 5 years. So,
sure.
So I just feel like there's some people when you're like, oh, what about Operation Warp Speed? What about that hydroxychloroquine happened for a full year before Joe Rogan ever told you about ivermectin? What about you never saw certain somebody wear a mask, even though everybody next to him was like, we have to have a mask on today. No, we don't. We have to have a mask on today. And they were like, he doesn't ever have a mask on. We're so mad. Look at him. He's a xenophobe and he won't wear his mask. And so I just felt like, if that bitch won't wear a mask, I'm not wearing a mask. That bitch isn't getting vaccinated, I'm not getting vaccinated. I didn't even care. It wasn't even about a worship. It was like, he was my least favorite person to wait on. Like, that rich white guy, he gets to walk around without a mask on, but I have to wear one. Like, if Joe Biden would have been our president and he would have put a mask on, I would have been like, oh, we're all wearing masks. But there was something about the pompousness that I was just like, Bigly, I'm not wearing a mask.
what a trip it was during that time. And what's interesting now is how much of, like, the COVID era is trying to be swept under the rug, where, like, people are like, oh, I was always against the vaccines, or I was, it's like, I remember, you know, like you get the Brett Weinsteins of the world from the intellectual dark web, who is like, yeah, this is this idea of masks, this idea of vaccines is crazy and everything. And it's like, hey, excuse me, but you're on the record on your podcast saying everybody needs to wear masks. I get it. You're allowed to change your position. That's fine. Welcome to the party. But like,
yeah, welcome to the party late. We're already on the next floor. Like
real late. Yeah. We've already moved the party to another location. But like, you don't get to rewrite history. You don't get to be like, oh, I was always against all this stuff. It's like, dude, we can watch your shows and see this stuff. So there's a lot of rewriting of history.
Joe Rogan, they'll put him on a pedestal and they'll be like, ivermectin, ivermectin. I'm like, he normalized PCR tests for all of you boobs. You all felt like it was okay because every single one of his guests that he had on, he let you know both of them PCR tested and he had a doctor right there. So he normalized it for you the same way he normalized the election night steal, the same way he normalized Neil deGrasse Tyson, the same way he normalizes these bad comedians. The same way it's like he's become the Howard Stern, but nobody realizes it yet. And they hold him on this pedestal. And I think it even down to his comedy club. Oh, Missy Shore and her son, Pauly Shore, MTV, MK Ultra, Pauly Shore. But you end up with the other comedy club, the mothership. So then you have to believe in a whole alien psyop crazy thing. And we have Joe Rogan leaning right in. I just feel like... Oh, yeah. Everybody puts this dude on a pedestal and they don't realize he's the cheesecloth catching them before they free think.
I don't like it when he has Mike Baker from the CIA on. I just look at that and I just go like, that should be automatic disqualification.
Or that he had Tom DeLonge from Blink 182 on his podcast a few years before talking about all these videos we're watching now and disclosure about the UFO. The first person to tell us is Tom DeLonge from Blink 182. And we don't hear his name again in the zeitgeist until the sub sinks. And where was the guy at the submarine the night before? Blink 182 concert. I like how they do this to us. Like, I can't help it. I remember everything. Like, I'm an elephant over here that I'm like, no, that's not the way it went down.
we need that, though. We need somebody to remember how it was, too. And we need somebody to bring the receipts from time to time to be like, no.
And sometimes law happens slow. I know it's easy to be blackpilled right now. But if there really is a case, if you're going to walk out of my store stealing from me, I have to let you walk all the way out of the store. And then if you're a whole group of people about to rob a bank, I might let you leave the bank because I also want to catch the driver and I might let the driver get you and I might tail the driver for a while because I think there's a mastermind somewhere I want to catch even more. And sometimes I think that's the way all this stuff works because the biggest thing about Harvey Weinstein, the biggest thing about the mafia, Rudy Giuliani, anything with New York, is the RICO Act. You have to get people through the RICO. And that's what people don't understand about even the stuff with Biden that attaches to Obama and all the Obamagate stuff and all the money through Ukraine and China. That splinters out like dirtier than any John Gotti movie script that people could, script. I know the script, but for the normies, sometimes I think the Jews in New York and the stories sometimes that we're like, what? It's like those are soft disclosure for normal people. And then the bad part of the media is trying to battle it with aliens in the mall.
It's like you can't even, it's like we can't drop interdimensional reptiles on these people on day one.
Not yet. They're not ready for it.
No, we got to give them like
even meet human tunnels. Vibration for another 2 years. They can't know JonBenet Ramsey's not real yet.
They're not ready for that conversation. I had
a weird thing I found out yesterday about please. The Miami tunnels or the Miami. There is tunnels in Miami. There's tunnels in all of Florida. Every single one of your cities. I've done digs on every state in the country. But a big thing about the Miami Mall that I felt like was really fun is that if you flip the coordinates on the Miami Mall, they're in Antarctica. So if you flip the latitude, longitude coordinates. Yeah. And I just thought that was really fun for portals and like if there were and everything we kind of talked about, even with Aleister Crowley or dark magic, maybe like if somebody who knows like Miami is named Miami because probably the Yucatan Peninsula attached at one point, and then maybe the Gulf was flooded, maybe with Phoenicians or something, but the Keys was the only way in. So the Mayans, the Miami Mayans, that magic that exists all the way to the hoodoo and voodoo across the Yucatan, Cuba, all the way up to New Orleans, all that in the oldest maps used to be Florida. So it's like there's something really interesting about, there's a Miami star chart that they can't even date it, that the like celestial map above it is perfect. They find like ancient underground caverns here that are just as old as anything. Redheaded giants, proof that humans walked alongside with woolly mammoth in Florida, like proofs of it. It's the Vero Man, but nobody knows this stuff. So who knows?
They've got that area known as the hot zone too in Cuba. The Keys in that area, they're Bimini, Bermuda Triangle sort of area, and that they call it the hot zone. And there's a lot of like, you know, if you work in that area, there's a lot of non-disclosure stuff you need to sign. You know, if you go down below and see things, you can't report on what you've seen. And there's of course a lot of activity there. We see a lot of pedophiles out there in their islands. We Dolphins. See, you know, Richard Branson with his submarines. We see Ghislaine Maxwell wanting to be a submarine pilot. You know, there's something under the water that's attracting
these weirdos. They won't let us communicate with the dolphins. Like it's illegal for us to communicate with the dolphins, and they have a killer whale every 1,000 miles from each other, everywhere on mainland. And as long as a killer whale is within 1,000 miles of another killer whale, it can communicate with it. And so I think there's something so like ladies can give birth and painless birth in the water with dolphins. And so somewhere in like my esoteric studies of getting to the Oracle of Delphi, and then I'm really obsessed with Mary and Mar and Moor and Myrrh and like more weird stuff than political stuff. But I think the Oracle of Delphi is the orca of dolphin. So I think if this oracle could attach in a way, if she was over water in like a triangular way, I think in a way like Eleven from Stranger Things, she could be over this water. And if she could communicate with an orca or a dolphin, I think she could communicate with the next level of alien life, whatever we consider that to be. Something, because the same powers, anyone that's called a UFO, anyone that can like, no, I call them inside me and I know they're coming. Anyone that knows what I say, it sounds crazy to you unless you've done that thing or hang out with people that do that thing. That's the same way dolphins work. When you sit near the water, you just know they're coming, and they come in that exact same frequency of that knowing with UFOs.
You got to check out the work of Dr. Richard Allen Miller. He's a linguistics expert, a really interesting dude. He's still around, but he did a lot of work with dolphin communication. He says it's the most powerful language out there, that it communicates way more information in a shorter span of time than any other language, and that even more so than Hebrew. So he was doing this, and this is a guy that was doing acid tests with Timothy Leary and all kinds of crazy shit like that. So Dr. Richard Allen Miller has been deep involved in this. I got to know him through Kev Baker, and he's, you know, talking to me about if you can understand how dolphins communicate, you can be way more efficient in your language. And you can use much less
grunting
power, much less energy needed to send the message. And you can fit more message in it if you understand how the dolphins do it. And of course, this is totally over my head. I'm listening to this just going, I don't know what the fuck you are talking about.
Apparently, if it's the same guy, but we were talking about it this week, and I'm bad sometimes with names until I hear them a few times, but some guy studied these dolphins so much, and like, let's say his grant was pulled from the government and he wasn't allowed to study these dolphins anymore. He was just thinking about how sad he was that his grant was pulled. The dolphins started not eating. They went on he didn't ever communicate with them in words. He never told them. They just all started going on a hunger strike.
No way.
They were so sad. He was sad, and they weren't going to be hanging out together anymore.
That's wild.
And have you ever seen The Way of Water, the Avatar
movie? No.
Okay.
Mm-mm. I'm sure there's all sorts of crazy.
So much truth in these two Avatar movies. But one of the weird ones about The Way of Water, and this isn't like a whether it's a great movie or not for film theory, just for the our conspiracy heads. The highest, most valued liquid on their entire planet is the liquid out of the pineal gland of a whale.
No way.
They say their spiritual center is so much more vast than ours. And their spiritual center is, they say it, I don't know why these two words stick out to me so much out of the explanation. They're like music philosophy center. And philosophy is the big thing I think that we've lost a lot of in our humanity that we used to be so brilliant with. And that's where I think a lot of creation comes from. And now we're also like, I need to know the answer. I need to know more answer than you. What's right? What's wrong? What's this? And now it's like we've lost how to philosophize. But I think it's interesting.
Podcasts are the new philosophy, right? Is that it? I don't know. Maybe.
Sometimes we get to, do the new church. Like people are trying to be their own Messiah. And they take themselves too seriously, or they won't let, they've spent so much time building their audience on one rhetoric that they're scared to change their mind or let their audience know they changed their mind about something.
Yeah.
And so there's too much.
Yeah, there's that. I don't want to be the Creflo Dollar or the Joel Osteen of podcasting. I don't need a private jet. I'm not going to try and bullshit you and sell you salvation. I will give you a free podcast. And you get what you pay for, people. I'll tell you.
I know. I will give you a free podcast, and I will try to get off my ass and keep putting out okay merch, because I feel like I have to give you something if you want to give me money. That's usually how it goes.
That's how. Yeah, so I've got like, books for sale. I've got merchandise for sale. I've got sponsors to the podcast that I think are a fit for the audience, their products that I use. So, you know, I mean, it's like, it's reasonable for me to want to represent them.
Everybody should micro-influence. I think we come from a, there was a lot of it where we got called grifters for a period of time because everyone was like, don't you want to wake everyone up? Don't you want to wake everyone up? And that was the thing. We got our microphones. We got our things. We had our passion about it. We spent all our time researching and, you know, chatting and doing these conversations. And then somewhere along the way, it's not a hobby anymore. You've put in your 10,000 hours. You're good at it or you aren't. You have your audience or you don't. And why can't you want to do what you want to do for a living and love it and get better at it and give more to it and give more to your audience? And so I used to have one philosophy on it, and now I big up people. Like, we spend $7.99 to $12.99 to $15.99 for Netflix and $12.99 for HBO and $120 to Comcast and this and that, and you give money to everywhere out of your pocket all day. You have apps coming out of your phone left and right, but this content and this, that sometimes people aren't just getting informed by you, they're hanging out with you. They're like, you make their day better. You like, and so it's okay. I feel like currency wise, sometimes you have energetic currency to give or knowledge currency, and other people have financial currency to give back. So I don't think anything grifty about it anymore. I big up it. And I'm like, this is how we take over. If we're the news now, then they've been fleecing you guys and lying for years. We're not trying to fleece you and we're not trying to lie.
No, I know how much work it goes into writing my books. I have zero problem selling them. I mean, frankly, the first book, if I had known how much work it was to write that octopus book, I would have never written it. It was 790 pages before I cut it down to 540. So I had to do all the research and write all that stuff out. If someone ever, you know, and I've given the book away plenty of times, don't get me wrong, but like, I have no problem saying like, it's worth something. It's valuable. It's worth $10 digitally, $28 or whatever in paperback. Like, yeah, that's what they charge it for. And that's that I can make a living doing that. I have zero problem doing that. I feel like I'm giving somebody valuable information, and if they want it. And of course, I'm not forcing it on anybody, because that would be against my anarchist core to force this on you. You know what I mean? I want you to just, if you want it, here it is. If you're interested, get involved. If you're not, that's cool too. I'm trying not to take it personally or anything like that. But Chaney, where's the best place for people to find you?
people can find
and support your work. Since we're talking about supporting each other's work, I mean, where can people go and support your work? For God's sake.
People can find me at projectchaney.com, all my links, and on YouTube. I hang out live every Friday nights, and we actually do a philosophy group with some really rad people that we have in and out all the time. And it's called Secret Society of Good Guys, and that's at Project Chaney too, as well. So yeah, everything's there.
That's Chaney. That's why we love him. Thank you for coming on. It's great to do this in like officially, even though it feels like we've done it a bunch of times in the past. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right this very second of sharing it with your friends and family. And if you haven't rated the show, and if you think we've done a good job, I'd appreciate 5-star review. Don't give me 4 stars. Just give me 5 stars. For God's sakes, man, if you got some problem, email me individually. I'm doing the best I can. Like I said, you get this show for free, so you get what you pay for. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.